Court will proceed to the sixth case, the United States versus Welch.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The Honor, Mr. Welch seeks to establish that the district court abused its discretion when it prohibited him from introducing expert testimony regarding the lay witness identification produced by the government at trial. Mr. Welch's expert would have given testimony regarding clothing bias, that is, misidentification made based on the clothing worn by the individual in the picture, and he would have presented testimony regarding the effects of external or internal stimuli on the witness's identification of the individual. The district court, in denying Mr. Welch's expert, held that his expert was scientifically valid and would have given testimony would have been based on scientific knowledge, but found that Mr. Welch's expert, Dr. Macklin, would not have assisted the jury. And its basis or its reasons for this decision was that, one, Mr. Welch had the ability to cross-examine the witnesses at trial. Two, the court gave a cautionary jury instruction at the end of the evidence at trial. But three, and we think most importantly, the court held that there was corroborating evidence of the witnesses' identifications, and this corroborating evidence undercut the need for Dr. Macklin's testimony.
Do you think the case needs to be remanded for, it was Judge Manning, wasn't it?
Yes, Your Honor.
For Judge Manning to explain the Hall factors and what she relied on as to the corroborating evidence?
We do, Your Honor. Because at the time Judge Manning, the district court, made his decision, there was no evidence before the court that corroborated the witness's identification. And we also submit that even during the trial and after the trial, or at least at the end of the trial, there was no evidence corroborating the witness's identification. We further state that in Hall, the court held that the corroborating evidence was substantial, and in addition held that it was secondary, that the main evidence in Hall was the confession made by the defendant to the to law enforcement authorities, where he laid out in sufficient in detail the crimes he had committed.
What about, however, the fact that were you the trial counsel?
I was, Your Honor.
Well, then that you were able to highlight the shortcomings in the witness's testimony without resort to Dr. Macklin's proposed testimony by extremely fine cross-examination.
Your Honor, Mr. Wilson's counsel was able to cross-examine the witnesses and was able to, I think, specifically cross-examine Ms. Judith Welch's testimony with regards to her being able to her reliance on the clothes to base her identification on. But cross-examination would not have introduced the jury to the clothing bias itself in a scientific way that Dr. Macklin would have done. Cross-examination could have highlighted what the defense thought was the inefficiencies of the identification, but it would not have introduced the jury to the fact that sometimes people make misidentifications because they're familiar or think they're familiar with the clothes worn by the individual, and that somehow heightens their sense that they recognize the person in the picture. In addition, the picture or the individual in the picture wore a baseball cap and sunglasses to, we think, attempt to disguise at least the upper part of their face. And so we believe this reason that the clothes were significant in this case, and why Ms. Welch relied so heavily on the clothes in making her identification, because she couldn't see the upper part of the individual in the picture's face. And so she only could see the lower part of the person's face, and thus, we believe, relied to a large part on the clothes worn by that individual and saying she bought these clothes and she's seen Mr. Welch in these clothes, and therefore that was Mr. Welch in the picture.
Is the difference between traditional eyewitness identification and surveillance video identification significant under 702?
I think the distinctions are that the person, the eyewitness who's making eyewitness identification is recalling or is able to remember the event. I think a person making identification from photographs are relying on, I think, similar things, but relying on more other factors. I think they are similar. I would say they are similar. I think they are different as well. But we think that it still doesn't affect how you apply 702. We think 702 only requires or only asks that the expert be of assistance or helpful to the jury. It doesn't ask that the expert prove everything or be case determinative. We clearly believe that Dr. Macklin's testimony about clothing bias and external or internal stimuli and how that may affect witnesses who look at photographs identifications clearly would have been helpful in this case, especially when all of the witnesses and more specifically Ms. Judith Welch relied so heavily on the clothing worn by the person in making their identification.
How do we factor in his friend who said that Mr. Welch had identified banks as his extra source of income?
Your Honor, we think that's, that there was evidence produced at trial. I don't know, I mean, it would be our position that that doesn't necessarily corroborate the witness's identification of an individual in the picture. And we think it clearly doesn't substantially corroborate their identifications as discussed in Hall. I'll say the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Mr. X.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Charles X, and I represent the United States. The record clearly, I believe, supports Judge Manning's exercise of discretion in this case. The test under 702 really is, in a nutshell, was that proposed expert testimony, was it going to assist the jury in understanding the evidence? And I think in looking at that question, you really have to decide, was this proposed testimony, does it really fit in the issues of this case? Now, first of all, I'd like to address the question, Judge Rovner, that you had about whether or not Judge Manning had sufficiently addressed her analysis of the facts, and in particular under, I would submit, the leading case, Hall, which lays out those three factors. And I would submit that she did an ample job in submitting, when you're looking at, I think, what counsel is saying, the pivotal fact of whether there was sufficient corroborating evidence. And what...
Well, she seemed to think that Hall explains why an eyewitness expert testimony won't assist the jury, but that isn't so. I mean, the three, she really just, you know, listed the factors.
Well,
she also failed to identify what the corroborating evidence was.
Well, I think there were two opportunities that she had to rule on this. One was pretrial, on when we filed our motion to bar the evidence. And then it was raised again post-trial, and the judge obviously ruled on that. And so what you have in the record are two separate rulings by Judge Manning. And I think probably between the two rulings, I think the most enlightening in terms of addressing the concerns that you have, Judge Rovner, was the post-trial ruling, which in the record you can find it at document 59. And what she basically says is that that the jury was able to determine whether the person on the videotape was the defendant by comparing him as he sat in court looking at the pictures of Mr. Welch. We had also introduced a family photograph that was taken very close in time, and which had him in certain clothing, i.e. a hat and sunglasses, which were very, very remarkably similar to the bank surveillance photographs of the actual robber. So what she pointed...
What if it was a Cubs cap, for instance? But is the videotape in the record?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. It is. And that's something that I want to really also emphasize as to why this case is different than some of the other cases that I think this court or other circuits have addressed. And that is, this is not a case involving the quote-unquote traditional eyewitness situation, or what sometimes is referred to as a casual eyewitness. That would be somebody who had never had any contact with the defendant before, except in under what typically in like a bank robbery case, under a stressful, very short, limited time. What you have here and what the government brought into evidence was that it played the videotapes. It had the blow-ups of those freeze frames from the tapes. It had the photograph, the known photograph of the defendant wearing the similar items of cap and sunglasses. And then what happened is that you had three lay witnesses. You had
one is the ex-wife. Now, a lot of ex-wives out there who like nothing more than to see their husbands in jail, right?
Well, Your Honor, that may or may not be true. But in this case, what I can tell you and what I think you were suggesting is that there was ample opportunity, and in fact, Mr. Chaffee exercised those opportunities to cross-examine Mrs. Welch as to what those underlying biases and did everything that he had at his disposal to impugn her credibility and to point out the biases that she had. Now, I would submit that cross-examination and giving the jury instructions and all the things that Hall said that you should do is a far more compelling way of informing a jury as to the reliability of her particular testimony. I will just say that
the second person was the second person was the friend.
The second person was a friend. He was a co-worker, and they had lived together for
right,
a period of time.
Am I mixing this case up with another? Didn't he get immunity?
He did.
So he got immunity. Okay. So he got immunity. She's the ex-wife. Who's the third?
The third is another former co-worker that worked with Mr. Welch and the other witness that got the immunity. They worked together at a brick factory during the period of time of the robbery.
And did that person get immunity?
No, she did not.
Okay.
And all three of those witnesses who had basically no constraints in viewing the videotapes as lay witnesses, so you don't have any of those same kinds of concerns that you have for the traditional or the casual witness. So when they were brought in court, looked at those items of the tape and the photographs, they weren't just taking an isolated or momentary glance. And I think another important thing that Judge Manning points out is that not only are they making those opinions known based on their extensive past connections with the defendant, but the jury is sitting right there watching it. So this is a little bit different, that they actually have the defendant sitting at the defense table. They have the tape, which is being played during the trial, which is they also have when they go back and deliberate. They have the blow-ups of that tape. They have the known photographs of the defendant wearing the almost very similar hat and sunglasses. You have the testimony of those lay witnesses of being not only familiar with the face themselves of the individual, but also a familiarity with the clothing, some of the clothing that the defendant was known to wear.
How would it have hurt the government to have Dr. Macklin testify?
How would it have hurt? I don't think it would have hurt the government at all, because I think that the judge properly exercised her discretion in that, you know, limiting what may have ended up being actually as much of a confusing issue for the jury, rather than letting the jury, look at an issue that I think this circuit has said looks upon with disfavor. And I'm not saying that certainly any district court has that right to bring it in. I'm simply saying if you look at all the Seventh Circuit case law and you look at the facts in this case, I think they are far more in favor of what the judge did here than in those cases that have already come down in this circuit where this court has said that there was ample justification for the court in excluding this type of expert witness testimony. Would it have hurt the government? No, I do not believe so. But on the other hand, I think that the defendant was given more than enough of an avenue of attack.
I don't know. What bothers me is that I often, well, not often, but now and again, you know, run up to someone and say, "Hello, how are you?" And it isn't them.
And this is what's different, is that you have somebody that's captured on a videotape, so you're not reliant on that moment of identification. They had every opportunity, actually an unlimited amount of time that they needed to watch that videotape and look at those freeze frames, so that kind of misidentification, which sometimes in the more traditional realm of misidentification issues, might compel under the circumstances bringing in an expert to help a jury ferret through those types of issues. But you don't have that here at all. I mean, you have something that very few bank robbery trials or crimes of violence have, and that is what I would submit is actually the best and most compelling physical evidence, and that is the actual crime is captured on the tape itself, and they have an unlimited and unferreted amount of time to be able to look at that evidence and really decide for themselves. And that's why I think, I know my time is up, but the last comment I would make is that I think under these particular facts that it really does go into the province of the jury in terms of a direct credibility issue. Do they believe it or do they not believe that testimony? They have enough of the other corroborating evidence, including that statement that I would disagree has very, very high probative value in terms of showing that this defendant was not wrongfully convicted here, or
wait,
that
which,
there wasn't
which statement?
The statement where the co-worker was approached by the defendant, Mr. Welch, asking, you know, I have a way to make some money, and asking, well, how is it? And he says, banks. And I would submit that the jury made its own credibility finding on exactly what that meant. I would respectfully submit that this court affirm the conviction and the sentence of the defendant in this case.
Thank you, Mr. Eck.
Thank you.
Mr. Chaffee?
Your Honor, there was no corroborating evidence at the time the district court made its decision to prohibit Dr. Macklin's testimony before the district court. Now, granted, and Mr. X brought this up, there were post-trial motions and where the court did, we think, put more substance on her reasoning for not granting a Rule 29 motion. But at the time pre-trial, when she made a decision to prohibit Dr. Macklin from testifying, there was no corroborating evidence before her.
Well, if she's right at the end, what's the prejudice at the beginning if she makes the ruling without sufficient basis? I mean, if her discretion overall is justified, so it's, the reasoning is supplied later. I mean, it's one thing to argue that the later reasoning cannot butcher initial call, but...
Well, I would say, Your Honor, that that's just one part that she still... if you look at Hall, does not use the correct analysis, because it's not whether just only that you have the corroborating evidence. Hall, we think, implicates or implies that where the identification testimony is the main evidence at trial, and we would submit the trial in this case, that was the main evidence. There were pictures and photographs, but the government just bring these people in just to bring them in. That was the main evidence at trial in this case. There was no physical evidence tying Mr. Welch to the charges at issue here. And so the Seventh Circuit in Hall, in citing an Eighth Circuit case, says that when the identification testimony is the main evidence and there is no substantial corroborating evidence of identification testimony, then it's abuse of discretion to prohibit the expert from testifying. And we think because of those are the facts that existed in this case, and especially existed pre-trial in this case, that Your Honor should reverse and remand this case.
If the judge had reviewed the video initially, would you still be making this argument?
If she had personally reviewed the video? Yes, Your Honor, we still would be. Well, because we think the video is a picture of a person with a baseball cap and sunglasses on. And we think the video doesn't show anything. And we think if the video was case determinative, the government wouldn't have called these witnesses in to make the identification.
Let me ask you this. Since the clothing is so common, which would support your theory, that is the baseball cap, the jeans, white t-shirt, would it be your position that in every case where we have just identification and what we would call common clothing, that it would be ineffectiveness of counsel not to advance an expert in every one of those cases? In other words, if defense counsel did not bring a Dr. Macklin or his wife to the, would that be ineffectiveness of counsel?
Well, there's a case where there are identifications made, and the identifications are in a substantial way relied on the clothing. Yes, I think all defense counsels should attempt, as we did here, move the court to introduce an expert to explain the biases that can exist and the misidentifications that can be made.
Is this an area of expertise, if you will, that can't be conveyed to counsel and employed by counsel in ineffective cross? I mean, there is obviously some expertise that one would argue is developed because of its uniquely scientific or technical base that needs not only the resume of the expert but his or her voice. Is this field of I guess psychology, because that's what the doctor's expertise is, one that can allow for a sort of a debriefing by able counsel and being able to employ through questioning and argument the same effect?
Could counsel cross-examine the witnesses about whether it was actually the clothing that was the basis for the identification? Yes, counsel could ask those questions and try to show the jury that the identification was based on the clothing and not from knowing the defendant. But what we believe that counsel couldn't do would be to explain to the jury that people do make misidentifications based on the clothing. Yes, we could cross-examine, but we couldn't take the next step.
Are there like all sorts of statistics about how often people mistake someone because of what they're wearing, that sort of thing? Is that one of the things that someone like Dr. Macklin testifies to?
Dr. Macklin would testify about statistics, about different studies that have been done regarding clothing bias and misidentifications based on external or internal stimulus. At this time, Your Honor, we'll ask the court to reverse and remand the district court's decision.
Thank you. Guys, government counsel, we thank you, and the case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.